Oh my God, that's good sperm.
Fish sperm?
So we were just saying this is going to be the next big thing. This is the pork belly of 2013.
I'm going to eat more sperm now.
That's a sentence you don't hear a lot in your casual.
Hey, everybody, what's happening? Welcome back. Man, spring sprung up. I guess you could say that. I didn't see it coming. This year, first time in my life, especially since I've been doing this show, that I didn't really see spring about to happen. Before I knew it, there were all these vegetables, and I thought, wait a minute, where's this coming from? You know, I'm so jaded now. I'm so used to things coming from out of the country and not in California, and I should be completely open. It's like it's March, April, and I'm starting to see stuff, and I thought, wait a minute, what, really, that's available now? Fava beans came first, and this is the first year that I've really been super into beans and legumes, things like that, where I want to cook a lot of them all the time. And fava beans were interesting because I got the fava beans, I open them up, you open these pods up, right, and there's these little white capsules. Inside of that, that's basically the skin of the fava beans. So not only you have to take it out of the pod, like peas are easy. Peas, you just take them out of the pod and that's it. The peas are done. With fava beans, they're encased in a little white film that protects the actual bean. So what you have to do is peel that off and get the bean out. Well, you're going to massacre the bean if you just try to peel that. So what I did was I kept them in these little white pockets, and I boiled some water, salted water, got it to a boil. I took some of these beans, I threw them in the water, turned the heat off, and let them sit in there for about 2 to 3 minutes. What that did was it kind of parboiled the bean without actually cooking the bean, so the bean stayed green, and the skin, the outside skin, kind of got loose, and I was able to take a little paring knife and easily pull that skin off, to the point to where I would just poke a hole in the top of that skin, squeeze it, and I would squeeze the bean would just come out. It's like popping a big zit, but that's kind of gross. Anyway, so that was basically my big thing, fava beans. So then what I would do is I'd collect these beans, and then when I was ready to actually cook them, I'd just throw them in a pan with a little olive oil, heat them up, and that would kind of cook them through, and then serve them. And they were great. They were fantastic. And that became our thing. Then now, so those are, basically that season's over. That season's short. Bean season's really short. Peas are in now, spring peas. I posted a picture on Facebook and on the My Life as a Foodie group. You see these things. They are unbelievable. Green, and I mean green, and fresh, and loaded. And let me say this, cheap. Holy shit, are they cheap. Fresh peas, there's nothing like them. You'll be eating the frozen stuff the rest of the year, but right now, while they're fresh, especially here in California, get them. Because what they do is they harvest these things. What they can't sell fresh, they cook and they freeze. And they're fine like that, okay? But you're never going to taste them like this unless you have them fresh. So that's my big thing. I'm like a veggie nerd now. Got a lot to talk about today. I made a lifestyle change back in January. That's kind of kept me kind of preoccupied. But 19 pounds lighter, 2 inches off my waist, at least, maybe a little more. My blood work came back. I had my physical, and my blood work back. It's fantastic. My doctor's very, very happy. I'm super healthy. I'm fit again, but I'm not going to stop, continue doing it. Kind of called for a bit of a lifestyle change. Less animal fat. Basically, I cut a lot of animal fat out. Didn't drink beer as much, drinking water more. I didn't stop drinking beer. I just cut back a little bit. Moderation. But I'm back, and we've got a lot to talk about. Well, and first thing I want to talk about is this news story. Now, it might be old news now. When I saw the story, I said, I got to talk about this on my show. The title from the New York Post was Hot Dog Truck Hooker in Hot Water Over Wiener Service. A Long Island hot dog cart owner was arrested for using her business as a front for prostitution. According to the New York Post, Catherine Scalia was selling hot dogs, and then she was handing out cards advertising her bachelor party services, one-on-one strips, topless cleaning service. An undercover cop arrested her when she offered to give him a hand job for $50. This was apparently after he took her up on a striptease offer. And it seems from time to time she'd sell hot dogs, as a neighbor put it, in her bra and panties. Now, this isn't the first time she'd been arrested for selling her special services along with hot dogs. She was arrested in 2004 after offering a police officer a look at her chest. But listen, even she's got her limits. At the time, she said, "I zip up when I see kids." And her family was going to let her stew in jail for a while. She got a 13-year-old son. He tells the Post, "I feel like if she stays in jail and does the time, maybe she'll learn a lesson. Maybe my grandma will eventually feel bad for her and get her out. Maybe." Scalia's bail was set basically at $2,000. She got out. And $2,000, better buy a lot of hand jobs if you wanted to pony up the cash. But listen to this audio.
And we begin with a story all new at 5. The woman dubbed the hot dog hooker. She got out of jail this afternoon and talked about her prostitution arrest. Long Island reporter Josh Einiger has more live from East Meadow. Josh?
Well, Diana, Kathy Scalia stood up in court today, raised her right hand, and pleaded guilty to prostitution. But a couple of hours later, she denied selling sex. She said she's something of a freelance stripper instead. Whatever she is, this mother of four definitely is sure of herself.
Yeah, that's her.
After 5 days in the clink, Kathy Scalia emerged unapologetic, unrepentant, and unwilling to change her chosen profession. Police say Scalia, who operates this hot dog truck in Baldwin, has been offering a little something extra on the side, selling herself for sex with men. She was arrested Friday in her East Rockaway home after police say an undercover cop solicited her.
I gave him a little lap dance. Next thing you know, he asked me for... I had 20 cop cars there with handcuffs on me.
Today, Scalia pleaded guilty as charged to one count of prostitution, even though hours later she insisted that isn't what she meant.
I plead guilty to a stripper, not prostitution. Prostitution is sex. Listen, I'm Sister Teresa over here, okay? Showing your cleavage is indecent exposure. Prostitution is sex, sexual acts.
A judge ordered her to undergo a psych evaluation. In the meantime,
sexy and I know it.
Tomorrow she plans to be back in a regular spot in Baldwin, selling hot dogs and, she says, lap dances.
Now this chick is a hot mess. $50 hand jobs. Can you imagine? Let me see. I'll take two hot dogs, one with mustard, one with mustard and onions, Diet Coke, and let's see. Oh, and a hand job. $59. Bargain. Yeah. Hey, that would make an episode of Out to Lunch, right? Yeah. Hey, dude, I'm getting a blowjob. Yeah. Listen, here I am bitching and moaning about how pathetic it is to eat from food trucks, because where you end up having to eat like on a curb or something. Imagine having this nut job serve you a couple hot dogs. You go around the back of the truck, she's tugging you off for $50. It's like a side order of shame. That's what that is. The funniest thing about this story, and there are a lot of funny things about this story, don't get me wrong, is that of all the businesses that have traditionally been used as a front for prostitution, how unlikely is a hot dog truck? Massage parlors, first one, right? Whole happy ending thing. I go to this masseuse. Now, I've been exercising a lot, and you know, my legs get knotted up. My ass gets knotted up. I call it glutamus hurtimus. All the time, man. I'm just like, I've constantly got knots, but they're good knots. So I go to the masseuse, and every time I tell someone, they say, "Where are you going?" I say, "I got a massage today." I go, "Oh, yeah, happy ending?" No, actually. She's a licensed massage therapist. I mean, certified. It's a genuine, and I don't want a hand job. Thank you. That's okay. You go to those places, right, that do that, you're not going to get a decent massage, and it's expensive. What the hell? Save your money. Go get a hot dog. Bars, nightclubs, strip clubs. Those are places, like strip clubs, that you can almost guarantee that at some point there's some prostitution going on. Lap dance, special room. You're getting a blowjob or a handjob in that place. Not a hot dog truck. I mean, it's not likely. You know, I'm there to put a wiener in my mouth, not the other way around, you know?
All right, Don, time for a beer review. Ready?
I'm ready.
How ready are you?
I am so fucking ready.
You're so ready, you even brought the beer with you.
Yes, I did.
What'd you bring?
I brought the Heretic Evil Cousin Imperial IPA.
And where's this from?
Pittsburgh, California.
Pittsburgh
Pittsburgh, CA, not
what?
PA.
Oh,
CA.
Oh, because yeah. Pittsburgh's known for Iron City and beers like that, right?
Yeah.
But that's it. Just Iron City. I don't think they make anything else in Pittsburgh.
I don't think so.
No? No, they make... that's about it, I think. No, I don't think Pittsburgh's really known for their beer.
Big Steel.
Yeah. So, Pittsburgh, California, where the hell is that?
It's up in the Bay Area, East Bay. And this is Jamil Zainashev's brewery.
Jamil from the Brewing Network?
Brewing Network, that's right. Yeah, this is his brewery. He started up, I think... a year more ago, and finally started finding it down here, so we figured we got to try it out.
I didn't even think he was actually brewing. I thought he was just like an amateur brewer. I mean, I knew he did a lot of pro-am stuff.
Yeah, but he went from pro to, or am to pro, so this is it.
Open it up.
Okay. Let's give it a swing. Ready?
Ooh, I'm so ready.
Sounds good.
It does sound good.
It's a bomber.
Now, this is an Imperial IPA, is that what you said?
Yeah. 8%, 100 IBUs.
100 IBUs?
Yep. And SRM's 4, so it's pretty light.
A pale. Yeah. It looks nice. Nice fat freaking head.
Beautiful beer. Wow. Haven't had it yet. This is my first shot at it.
You've never tasted this beer?
Nope. Nope, I tried to get on tap one night, but they had blown the keg.
More, please.
Sure.
Oh, nice.
There we go. How's the nose?
It's big, because I'm Italian. Oh, you mean the beer.
I didn't say how's the beak, I said how's the nose.
You fucker. Fuck you, man. Yeah, that smells great, dude. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Big, fat aroma. You know what this kind of reminds me of?
Tons
Dude of Night IPA.
I wish that was this good. Wow, that smells good. Try it?
Yeah, I'm going to try it. Oh.
Oh, man.
That is pleasant.
There's a lot of hop in that, but it's not over the top. It's delicious.
It is.
Wow.
Very...
lots of citrus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tons
yes.
of citrus. It's not piney. It's very citrusy.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.
The malt carries it, but I'm telling you, there's still bitterness there. I like that. There's
a lot of bitterness to it, but the hop allows it to balance out, or the malt balances it out really well. Jamil.
Is it Jamil?
Jamil Zainashev.
Oh, Jamil Zainashev.
Yeah. How much Big Paw did you drink before?
I drank a lot of Big Paw. We had my barley wine, my first ever attempt at a barley wine today.
It was a very good swing at the bat, believe me. It was good. You done got me buzzed.
It is a home run. Yeah. I might say so myself now.
Aww. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. That's very good. No,
like the cousin.
Jamil
Zainashev.
You want to taste this, honey?
No.
Jay-Z.
She's not a fan of the hops.
No.
Okay. You want to just smell it? Let's get Katrina's nose in here. Do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was convincing.
Ooh, yeah, I loved it.
Ah, delicious.
Well, thanks for bringing it. Where'd you find this?
I found this at Whole Paycheck.
Okay. Here in Orange County?
Yeah. So Whole Foods.
What's their distribution like?
I don't know. Right now, I think it's just West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just started seeing it get down here in the last week or so.
Is this the only beer he's brewing? Do you know?
No. There's like 4 or 5 different beers he has out. He has like Evil Cousin, Evil Twin, Evil This, Evil That. So he's definitely going on the evil theme.
I like it. Any Belgians?
I don't know. I have to look.
Okay.
Yeah.
Way to come prepared.
Thanks for putting me on the spot, too.
All right, so Evil Cousin, do you know the website by chance?
Yeah, www.hereticbrew.com.
Now look it up on Google. Oh, you know what? It's going to be on the show. I'll go ahead and tell you.
There you go.
I'll post on it. It's great beer. Literally, I love this. Nice and balanced.
Excellent beer.
It's an Imperial. It's right in there. It's not Pliny, but he knows that.
No, and it shouldn't be.
No.
This is Heretic.
It's a Heretic. That's correct. Love it. Nice job.
Good stuff.
Jamil.
Good job, buddy.
Is he your buddy?
Now he is. Now that I can drink his beer.
So in this thing of getting fit, and I know it bored the hell out of a lot of you, and I apologize, but in January I had to do something because my health was starting to go, and I'm getting middle aged, and I started to get a beer belly. I started to become slow. My blood work was kind of wonky, last time I had my physical last year. And I thought, you know what, I got to get a grip on this. I've been, you know, fairly athletic my entire life. What's happening? My face is fat. I don't have those cheekbones anymore. I've got the gut going. Brutal. So I started exercising, started eating right, and had to learn, I had to kind of reteach myself how to do this stuff. Because for the most part, what we eat generally is pretty good. We cut back some of the animal fats, the bad fats. That's bad. The good fats are good. The bad fats are bad. The other thing is your metabolism. You know, as you get older, your metabolism starts to drop, so you've got to raise it. And the way to raise it is to keep your body moving at all times. And what I mean by that is the internal and the external. So you're working out. I try to work out every day, an hour, half hour, whatever time I have, I give it. I give myself. I do it for myself. And you have to do it for yourself. If you really want to do it, you got to do it for yourself. So I make sure that I'm moving. And I'm moving in my target heart rate, about 70% of my max. And I keep it there for an hour. And I can do that running, cycling, walking. You can walk and do this. Walk fast, get it done. 1 hour. And I burn 1,000 calories doing this. 1,000 calories in an hour. Do that five times a week, you're burning 5,000 calories in a week. Watch what you eat, and now you're really talking. So ways to raise your metabolism, one of the things is eat more often. And that's why I say eat more to weigh less is basically the rule. Now, if you skip meals, your body's calorie burning goes way cold. Now, you've got to spread your calories out. Mini meals, snacks throughout the day. Smart, really smart stuff. Had to cut back on the booze. That sucked. But, you know, those are things that I had to, you know, those calories go right to your belly. It's bad. You can still have beer. You just can't have 50 of them. You know what I mean? And you have to eat breakfast. You got to eat breakfast every day. I mean, if you eat breakfast, you start your body working. And eat some protein in the morning. They say if you eat protein in the morning, you're setting yourself up for the rest of the day. People who eat eggs in the morning. Now, listen, if you're worried about eggs and the cholesterol, take the egg yolks out. That's where all the cholesterol is. Just eat the egg whites. Couple egg whites in the morning with some toast, maybe some yogurt. That's a good breakfast. But with that protein, even if you mix in some nuts or something, with that protein, you're setting yourself up because people who eat eggs for breakfast end up eating less calories the rest of the day because your body says, oh, I've been fed. You give your body protein. That's how Atkins was all based. You give your body protein and your body says, I feel good. I've eaten now. But if you stop eating, your body says, wait a minute. Where's my next meal going to come from? It starts to kind of store things that it shouldn't store because it's going to rely on itself to feed itself. And that's completely missing the point. The other thing is that you have to eat smaller portions. You know, there's this conspiracy to kind of trick you into eating more, and we're all guilty of it. That's why I thought tapas was such a great idea. Eating smaller meals, eating lighter. You know, one of the things I've learned a lot, but if you've got a problem with eating too much, and I didn't, but, you know, I was eating poorly because I wasn't eating a lot. I wasn't eating often. And then I'd gorge. When I did eat, I'd eat big. And, you know, my body was just kind of fooling itself. But they say you should use smaller bowls and spoons. Use, you know, you would eat more if you're eating more. I mean, it's like Katrina said about pho. You know, when I go to a pho restaurant, have you ever seen the bowl of pho? The bowl is humongous. But when I eat pho, especially at work, I bring a smaller bowl. And it packs that bowl. I don't eat it all. So I'm eating less that way. And I don't do it purposely. I do it because my bowl is smaller. But that's one of the things you do. Use small bowls and spoons. They say drink from a tall glass. If you give drinking glasses with the same capacity, we pour more into a short glass than we would a tall one. And skip the value size. If they say supersize me, don't supersize me. That's crazy. But the thing is this, especially with drinking, and this really was the problem with drinking. When you drink and you drink too much, you start that your mind alters a little bit, and you start to think, I think I want some M&Ms. Well, you really don't want the M&Ms, but because you're drinking, your body says, nah, do the M&Ms. It's like devil's advocate. You know, beer is a devil's advocate. It wants you to, you know, it wants to gorge. You're going to make silly decisions when you drink. So that was another thing. What I found was, the calories in beer, they say, oh, they're empty calories. They're empty calories because your body gets nothing from them. It goes right to your belly. That's where home is. That's where it wants to be. And that's why we end up having this big, big belly. And then that's really hard to work off. You ever tried crunches? They suck. Planks suck too. They suck less than crunches. But, you know, it's a lot easier to put it on than it is to take it off. And now I found out that there's some place out there, these fast food restaurants are offering you $3,500 to eat their food. They're doing this study. And I don't know the details. I didn't really want to get into it. But I thought, who would do that to themselves? For $3,500, they're going to pay you to eat fast food as a study to see, you know, about obesity. That's just stupid. Another thing is, and when we're traveling, we say, well, you know, my schedule's mixed up. If you're on the road, you know, avoid airport food. You can bring stuff with you. Bring bags of nuts, dried cranberries, cereal, sunflower seeds, cashews, raisins. Bring a bunch of servings in little Ziploc bags. And believe me, again, it's that thing that will fill your stomach up. It's healthy. It's good for you. Those are things I learned. I learned not to snack, but when I did, I snacked smart. I snacked on fruit, nuts, things that were good for me. And I was fine with that. Once you start seeing results, you're really going to be happy. And then, you know, try not to eat late at night. Late night binging will do you. You know, those TV ads they show at night, oh man, that looks good. Let's go get an ice cream. No, you can't do that. But the bigger thing was eating less sugar. I was putting sugar in my coffee. And it's not the healthiest thing in the world, but I went to Equal because, you know, zero calories. I'll take the chemical hit on that. But then after a while, when I have espresso, I don't put anything in it, not even sugar or Equal, just straight up espresso, solid, so I can taste the coffee. But sugar, it comes in so many different forms. Soda, juice, sweetened teas and coffee, sugar cereals, candy. You know, it's in everything. It's in sports drinks. You know, I was drinking Gatorade after a workout, 120 calories. Now, look, I'm not going to judge these calories. It's no big deal because I've just burned, you know, $2,000. But still, water. Drink some water. You're fine. Your body didn't lose Gatorade. It lost water. Electrolytes? Sure. Okay. I'll take it. But you learn how to eat small, eat the right things. And again, ad hoc. That ad hoc at home book is fantastic. There's so many great recipes in that. So many great ways to cook vegetables. The vegetables that are good for you. And you live more of a Mediterranean diet. Use olive oil, not butter. You can still use butter, just not as much. Aioli, you know, if you think about it, egg yolks and olive oil. And now, that's not a horrible thing, and you're not eating a lot of it, but it's still mayonnaise, just not processed mayonnaise. And I just try to stay away from a lot of that stuff. And I did start to shop the inside aisles because there were things that I needed from the inside aisles, like flour, nuts, things like that. So it does, you know, it does work both ways. But another way to kickstart your metabolism is first thing in the morning, have some coffee, and then go do your cardio. You know, nobody wakes up ready to exercise. Nobody does. But in the morning, it's a prime workout time. You're burning a higher percentage of fat before you eat breakfast because your body's supply of available carbohydrate energy is depleted and the hormonal state makes your body fat a little more accessible. So it's wide open. It's like, come get me. So get some coffee. You know, you can squeeze a little more with the coffee and then go do your workout. Go run, walk, cycle, do whatever you want, but get it done early and then have your breakfast. And your breakfast, lots of protein, like I said, protein and slow-burning carbohydrates. You know, keep it low in fat, stick with slow-acting carbohydrates, and then you can have like a second breakfast and lunch, a little protein, a little fiber. You know, if you want to eat a little late, you can eat like twice in the morning, twice in the afternoon, twice in the evening. Just make them smaller. You know, lots of protein, lots of fiber. He's got a mid-morning snack. I found oatmeal and berries. Maybe a little protein powder. If you want to do lunch, you could do grilled chicken breast, a little bit of vegetables, some rice, some beans, and you're set. And that's plenty of food. But again, that ad hoc at home book, there's so many great recipes in there that if you look at the things that are fat, like butter, or if you look at things, if you want to take eggs out and mix it with egg whites, you can substitute certain things. But there are meals there that are very good for you, and you can still live your foodie lifestyle and enjoy yourself by simply being a little bit more wise about what you eat, and then exercise, because exercise is key, and I know that's the biggest thing. People don't want to get off their asses, get off the couch, and exercise. But the key really is to stick with your doctor, get your blood checked out, find out where you're at, and then do something about, you know, whatever problems you have. And they'll recommend. They'll tell you what to do. They'll recommend it. That's what they do for a living. But my cholesterol, I cut it way the hell down by just eating a lot of fiber. Psyllium is great fiber. Barley is great fiber. Barley and oatmeal have beta-glucans, which are soluble fibers that help lower your LDL cholesterol, and they prevent it from being absorbed into your bloodstream. Psyllium, which you know you can buy on its own, or sometimes it's in supplements and stuff, it'll slash your LDL by triggering an increase in your body's excretion of bile acid, which you know helps digestion. And that basically converts into cholesterol. So you're breaking it all down. And these are little things that, you know, are little tips and tricks that cut away. Now, they might cut away in a small, very small increments. But when all this stuff adds up over time, and then when you go back for that blood test, you know, over a year, you go back for that blood test and your numbers are down. And now you're back to where you thought you might have been. And then you can go for another year and it'll come back even further. Believe me, once you cross the plateau and you look at yourself or somebody says, wow, you look fantastic. What'd you do? That's when the fuel kicks in. That's when you're really going to want to do it again. Chris Konyak did this for a month, worked with a personal trainer, ate right, was working out all the time. I think he lost like 22, 23 pounds in a month, lost 6 inches off his waist. It dripped off, and he looks great. It'd be great to see if he continues to do that.
We got a good one for Chasing Life today. It's all about choosing foods with higher water content. I want you to remember this. By changing just that one thing, you're going to increase the volume of what you eat while calories you consume. Who doesn't want that? And why is it important? Well, people trying to lose weight often tell me they feel deprived because they're cutting their portion short. And I can promise you this. You won't feel deprived if you simply practice this. It is known as volumetrics. It's going to help you feel full on fewer calories. So, for example, this normal size hamburger over here, take a look there, about 600 calories. If you don't get the fries or chips, you're obviously saving calories, but you may not be as satisfied by simply eating that. Or you could do something like this. This sort of makes the point over here. You cut the hamburger in half, and then you slowly add all this other food in here, a big salad with lots of vegetables, a big portion of watermelon as well. The total of this, 400 calories. And a guaranteed full stomach as well. Now, if the only thing you change in your life right now, you're thinking about making a change, the only thing you do is this, is to reduce each meal by about 200 calories, like we just did, pretty simply, you would lose about a pound a week, and you would still feel full. That's what we're about, Chasing Life.
I've got a couple of Chris Constantino pieces to discuss with you guys. And I had a discussion with a chef, I'm not going to name who it was, last week, and he came up. And in the conversation, I learned that Constantino really doesn't want to be on TV anymore. And I can't say I blame him. He did that show. What was it called? Chef versus City, with that other chef that he was on Iron Chef America with. Oh, God. It was horrible. I even admit it was horrible. But he was interviewed for a website called Food Republic a couple weeks ago. And he basically said, you know, I put a show out there for the world to see. It was called Chef Unleashed. And it shook the boat for a lot of people. But I'm not going to do television anymore. Basically, I walked away. I felt like what I was doing, what I was conveying was not who I was. The racing around in particular. That's that show where they were running around the city. And the food gorging. He says, like, to eat as many chilies as you can. I just don't think that's intelligent. And me doing that was a bad thing. So I think he thinks that people are going to view him differently now because he's done those things. Listen, he was trying to be on TV. You're a monkey when you're on television. I'm going to embed this on the site so you guys can see it. But here's a little clip from this pilot. It's a pilot that he shot called Chef Unleashed, and it was rejected by the network that was paying for it. Now, no one would ever have the balls to put this on television, which is why we need to look outside of television for real entertainment. YouTube, Vimeo, Hulu. You know, because there's no ratings. You put explicit tag on it, and that's good enough for them. There's nobody to appease. You don't have to worry about sponsors. And look, I'm not going to blame the network that said no to it. But no one's going to want this because there's going to be backlash. Listen.
I'm a hardworking chef, and I'm known for pushing the limits. They call me the king of guts because there's just about no part of an animal I won't serve. Sometimes I need to escape from my kitchen to get to the source of the food I love. I'm Chris Cosentino, and this is Chef Unleashed. Let me show you where good food really comes from when it's done right. I'm in Texas Hill Country at Broken Arrow Ranch, purveyors of the best wild game in America. Down here, deer, antelope, elk, and wild boar roam free over millions of acres until they're field harvested, hunted on open terrain. The meat from Broken Arrow Ranch is incredible, as true to nature as you can get. Like a lot of top chefs from coast to coast, I've been a customer for years. Now I'm going to join the hunt. The deer are looking pretty scarce. We see a few, but they take off. Just as I started wondering if we'd ever find one,
Don't move.
I'm going to collect some blood to make a special breakfast for the hunt team. This might be more than they bargained for.
You can see this blood's coagulating already. So I've got some wine somewhere.
She's done.
In Italy, they do a dish called Magliacci, where they take that first kill blood and they make a cake with a little bit of juniper, which is everywhere wild
right,
here.
Right.
We're going to take a little flour and we're serving it with eggs. So it's like a poor man's blood sausage for breakfast.
I'm using the fresh blood to make a traditional Italian hunt breakfast right here in the field.
I love working out in the middle of nowhere. It's always fun.
Magliaccia is the hunter's blood cake. A little garlic. This is more of a fancy salt. I'm going to make a little mini mortar and pestle.
Jerry, one of the guys on the hunt, is skeptical.
It smells like wine, right?
It does.
Seriously, I promise you. So we're going to add that in. So far we have garlic, salt, blood, little rosemary. I mean, we are in Texas, right? Everybody likes chili. For 1 liter of blood, it's about a half cup of flour. There we go. Now we're talking. Now we're talking the consistency.
It looks like pancakes. We're going to have pancakes and eggs.
There we go. Now we're talking.
We don't want it to be too thick.
So as soon as this comes out, I'll drop it on a plate. I'll drop 2 eggs in, a little pepper on the eggs. And we literally baste the eggs, drop the eggs on top, and we're done.
Yeah. It's like a funnel cake.
Exactly.
There he is.
One of my favorite things as a chef is watching somebody like Jerry enjoy something they swore they'd never eat.
That's great. That's really good.
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Food Network, and I'll get to that in a second, they would never think to put something like this on television because the sponsors would just go apeshit. There'd be such a public outcry. Travel Channel pushes the boundaries sometimes. But even they have their limits. No one will ever show a deer taking a headshot, let alone showing a chef sinking a knife into its stomach to remove the blood so he can make a blood cake. That's just something people cannot stomach that. They really don't want to know where the food comes from. They don't want to see Bambi taking a headshot. They've got that image of Peter Cottontail in their heads. They don't want to see a pig getting dispatched. Like I said, you know, somehow there's a farm out in Iowa where pork chops just run free. You catch him with a net. Nobody wants the truth about their food. Cosentino, he's not going to push it, and I don't blame him. And it's a true loss for those of us who really want to know what he knows and learn what he can do. And networks won't do it. Maybe the internet's the place, but then again, he says, you know, screw it. It's not worth it. And this next Food Network star, Katrina saved it. Says, let's, you know, watch it. It's just like Top Chef, she says. You know, the beginning of Top Chef, when the season first starts, they'll show you like a 2-minute montage of everything that's going to happen throughout the season. And it looked, I couldn't get past the intro. That's how pathetic I found it. The Food Network, pathetic. It turned into a complete ripoff of Top Chef, which has also run its course for me. And have they no shame at all? I mean, they already tried to rip off Top Chef once with that Chopped. I guess that wasn't enough, though. May as well go all out, recreate Top Chef. It only took them 8 years, 9 years, however long it's been. But listen, I have completely turned away from Food Network, but I do see one positive for small mom-and-pop restaurants. Food Network has become less about cooking, I think. It's like, you know, they've even stopped trying. I think people really don't care about that anymore. Maybe they just don't. You know, maybe they don't want cooking instruction. Maybe they want to see where to eat. Visiting restaurants, that seems to be the kind of most entertaining thing anyway. I mean, look at No Reservations and shows like Guy Fieri's Diners, Drive-Ins, Dives, whatever that is. I read something recently that really blew me away about him. Restaurants that are featured on his show, on Guy's show, have reported double revenue, sometimes even triple, They say business gets so crazy that they're pushed to the limits in every aspect. They say it's a blessing and a curse. The owner of this burger chain said his show aired 3 years ago. After it aired, sales at his original store were like $50,000 a month, tripled to $150,000 a month. But he was ready for it because Guy Fieri warned him. He said, smaller businesses have been overwhelmed in the past. You better prepare for this. He says, it's like standing on the shore waiting for the storm to come. He even said, while Guy was filming, he came up to him and said, look, I'm really sorry I'm here. He said he had some locations featured on a show had just completely crashed and burned. Tiny mom and pops had, you know, dozens of customers a day, turned into hundreds. He said, be prepared, and I got prepared for it. I listened to him. It sounds like a lot of bragging, right? You better be ready. When this show airs, you're going to get a lot of business. Yeah, right, sure. But it's true. Here, case in point, Big Kitchen in San Diego. It's this hole-in-the-wall diner, very small place in the middle of a neighborhood with not a whole lot else around it in San Diego. If you didn't know it was there, you'd miss it. Years ago, Katrina and I were going to San Diego. Katrina had seen this show. Rachel raised $40 a day. They featured Big Kitchen, and she wanted to visit. And it turned out to be one of the favorite places for breakfast for us. And we've been there twice now. We're just there again in March. Business boomed for her. It was destined to boom. Rachel Ray just helped her out. And you know what? I'm glad she did. So Food Network is good for that. And look, they started a lot of careers. They did good things. But this is not good. And I don't know, no reservations, what, season 8 or 9 now? I don't know which one it is. It's been pretty damned entertaining. One of the best episodes, Japan Cook It Raw. And if you missed that, look for it again. Travel Channel shows it all the time, TiVo it. It's maybe one of the best episodes of No Reservations he's ever done. I'll play a clip for you. Bourdain got, here's what happened. The day that it was going to show, Bourdain posted on his Tumblr blog that one of the journalists who attended the event, one of the lions of the food writing community, as he puts it, made such a spectacle of himself that he was embarrassed, and his staff got really pissed off.
To the north and west of Tokyo, on the Noto Peninsula, is Ishikawa Prefecture. A landscape very different from crowded Tokyo. From all over the world, the Cook It Raw chefs are descending on this place today because of its raw ingredients. Most famously, the king crab, yellowtail, and eel pulled out of its waters. The local produce is equaled in quality by the elite group of carefully chosen chefs attending this annual gastronomic experiment.
Look at this fresh fish I shot here earlier.
This meal kicks off Cook It Raw. The place, Hosho Sushi in Kanazawa. The chefs meet and greet, many for the first time. Others are old friends. Rene Redzepi, Albert Adria, Mauro Colagreco, Alexandre Gauthier, Claude Bozzi, Alex Atella, Magnus Nilsson, and Daniel Patterson, among others. It's a pretty intimidating lineup, especially for last-minute addition Sean Brock. Sean's restaurants Husk and McCready's in Charleston, South Carolina, has suddenly projected him into the full glare of worldwide attention.
Oh, my God. Hello, when I eat something and it makes me realize that I don't know anything about food.
Fish doesn't come much fresher than the stuff that's still moving. It's this almost excruciating attention to detail and ingredients that has drawn Cook It Raw here.
You know, I see all of this as a evolution of food. You do it for so long and you realize what is important and you just put it on the plate in its most perfect state. You know, America doesn't understand this.
We're getting there.
We have to slice that and sear it and put it on risotto with butter sauce, you know?
Even his baby steps, man. I mean, it's like, this is what Mario's genius said years ago. He wanted to serve brains. He understood that in the beginning, you have to put the brains inside a ravioli and put a goddamn shrimp and a truffle on top.
Yeah. Okay.
But enlightenment comes a little bit at a time, you know?
Yeah.
So Bourdain doesn't say who the food writer was, but he wrote this. He goes, over the course of a few days, he revealed himself to be the most vicious, abusive, misogynistic, backbiting piece of shit I've ever met in my life. And after over 30 years in the restaurant business, that's saying something. I'm hardly the nicest or most polite guy in the world, but even I was shocked. When not shouting profanities at the chefs, bursting into noisy and prolonged bouts of flatulence during the traditional tea ceremony, insulting and belligerently interfering with my crew by flashing his cell phone camera directly into their eyes while they were working, saying, "I'm a journalist, I'm allowed." This guy was drinking himself stupid. It was only through their infinite mercy and perhaps no small amount of pity for this elderly and shambolic creature that my crew did not punch his face in. They were sorely tempted. Anyone who attended the event will surely recognize which particular steaming dribble of hors d'oeuvre I'm talking about. So the question was, who was it? Because he wouldn't say. Everyone had to guess. I thought it was Alan Richman from GQ, but Bourdain said it was someone he liked and admired before. And I know he hates Richman. It sure as shit wasn't Ruth Reichel. But if you scour the message boards on Eater, you'll see that all fingers point to Jeffrey Steingarten. You know who Steingarten is, don't you? He's that plump dude who judges on Top Chef, Iron Chef America with thick glasses, slurring voice. This guy, he must have Jack Daniels on his Wheaties. He sounds drunk every single time. All fingers were pointing at Steingarten so firmly that even Chris Konyak chimed in. He said, "I judged with him on Iron Chef. I left the taping pissed off and needing a drink after listening to him talk shit to me the entire taping." So yeah, there are some stories. Lots of stories like that. Then this video from RedVisitor.com surfaces from Cook It Raw Lapland.
I'm Jeff Steingarten from Manhattan. I'm the food critic for Vogue magazine. I was invited along on this trip as a journalist. We were being fed by some of the best young chefs in the world. Totally apart also from their working together, just individually, just having the ideas of the individual chefs and using these local ingredients was really quite amazing. Quite an amazing experience.
So I don't know. He was definitely there. And it looks, you know, looks pretty bad. So Chris Constantino has a book called Beginnings. It's a new cookbook. And it's all about vegetables. And there's a little trailer for the book. And I'm going to play it for you here.
My name is Chris Constantino. I'm chef partner of Encanto in San Francisco. People like to say we're very old school Italian. We are a whole animal ethic, nose to tail, rooter to tooter, whatever you choose to call it. This is wild salmon roe. By doing this, I'm going to use the entirety of the salmon. Beginnings is, it's a beginning for me because it's my first book. It's the beginning to a meal. This is not the book that everybody expected for me. Everybody was expecting the offal book. The fact that this book is about 85% vegetable, too, I think will really kind of take people back. I cook food that's inspired by Italian thought process and technique. So it's not cow eat-tal. It's not French or Mediterranean. It's just Italian philosophy within food. We have very ornate, detailed, super fine dishes, and then we have really rustic, simple dishes. I mean, you can choose your destiny with this. Food is forever changing. Food changes from beginning of tomato season to the middle to the end. There's a science to that. What grows together goes together. Tom Colicchio was right when he said that 15 years ago. Fava beans and strawberries, they grow together. Same season, they go together.
It's all right, I'll help you.
The term chef, it's ultimately just teacher. You know, I learn every day.
Oh, wow, that was great.
I just want people to be able to cook and not be afraid. You know, it's just food. If it's coming from your heart, that's all that really matters.
You know, I love vegetables. And this, it's not about this lifestyle change that I've made. It's always been that way. We have vegetables all the time. We have at least one or two servings a day. I'm big on it. I think it's good for you. They taste great. Here in California, they're fresh all the time. And it's just, there's no reason not to eat them. But I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian. And I've always been against that because I think if you get too political, then, you know, with your food, then it becomes an issue. And when I talk about political, I'm talking about food issues here and, you know, the rights of farmers and stuff like that. That's different. But I'm not judging people because of what they eat. And this foie gras ban that's starting here, it's horrible that it's going to happen, but it's happening. Now, am I going to miss it? Is my life going to change? No. Do I feel like, oh, they won? No, I don't care. I just think it's silly that people make such a big freaking deal out of stuff. You know, when they inflict political warfare on you, that's when it becomes an issue. The bottom line is this. I love to eat meat, chicken, fish, beef, pork, lamb, whatever. But I consume more fruits and vegetables and nuts and grains than I do, you know, animal protein in my house. But I don't wave it in your face. But I do like the idea of a book like this that really features vegetables, because there are plenty to eat. They're good for you. There are so many different things you can do with them other than steam them. And I think that in light of the situation we're looking at with a lot of the recalls, the meat recalls and fears and dangers, maybe we should start thinking about eating less meat, not cutting it out entirely, but eating less. You know, there's this whole push now that meat's bad for you, which is complete bullshit. But they want to tax meat, all meat. They want to tax the shit out of it because meat will kill you. They want to do to meat what they did to cigarettes. And it's you can't prove that meat will kill you. You have people eating meat until they're 110. They're fine. And when they die, it's not the meat that killed them. How about this? You could eat vegetables all the time. Be a vegan all the time. You die at 39, a truck hit you. You know, that's not the killer. But you believe what you want. Do what you want. Just leave me alone. The fact that they're protesting in front of these restaurants that serve foie gras, that's bizarre. Anyway, Chris Constantino's book's Beginnings looks good. Looks really good. And that is all I have for you guys today. Thanks to CNN for the audio. Thanks to Travel Channel for the audio. Don't forget to join our Facebook group. Go to mylifeasafoodie.com. There are links on the right-hand side. You can join Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm tweeting all sorts of weird stuff now. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie.